Well, it was all about how to score in a foreign country.
Yeah, what do you do all day?
Not that much.
I thought that new promotion was supposed to be a lot more work.
Yeah, when the season starts. Right now I sit around pretending that I'm busy.
How do you pull that off?
I always look annoyed. Well, when you look annoyed all the time, people think that you're busy. Think about it.
He looks very busy.
I know what I'm doing. In fact, Mr. Wilhelm gave me one of those little stress dolls. All right. Back to work.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 64. It is Back to Work. Took 1 week off. I showed some art at the market, and I volunteered. And I want everyone to know that I volunteered, because some people don't need the attention, but I do. So I am a good person, just so you know. Open mic number 4 is this coming Tuesday at Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue. I hope to see you there. And my name is Will Koontz, of course, host of the Homemade Broadcast. And today I am with Stephanie McKee. Hello, Stephanie.
Hello, Will.
Good I'm sorry, here. I didn't have your mic on, and you tried to jump in for a second, and I forgot that I didn't have your mic on.
It was completely unnecessary, so.
I'm still new. I'm still learning this process. But thank you for joining me today.
Of course.
Stephanie is a visual artist. She brought me a very lovely piece that I just purchased in change. Because she's getting rid of all of her old stuff.
Clearing out the studio.
That's right. Sometimes you got to do that.
And sometimes you have some very old art. So.
Yeah. Yep. And it's good that it's going somewhere as opposed to just sitting around.
Or going in a trash can, which is never an option that you really want, but is sometimes necessary. Sad to say.
Yes, I agree. I actually had to do that myself recently with some USF stuff. Mm-hmm. That was around during that time.
Oh, good old college art.
That was very embarrassing for me that when I looked at, and I wonder if that's going to continue, if that's going to be kind of a gradual, like in 5 years, if I look at some of this stuff that I'm doing now, if I'm going to be like ashamed by it.
It's a really good question.
Because I know like bands and stuff, I've heard interviews like Conor Oberst and like even Brand New, those bands, they all hate playing their old stuff. But like, I love that stuff and people still love that stuff, but they really hate playing it. And I think they understand, they get to a point where they're like, okay, I know I'm going to have to do this, but it pains me. Hmm. What do you think?
I think that the greats still love playing their early stuff because it is still good. I listen to a lot of Paul Simon. I love him right now. And I mean, he's been around for decades and my husband's seen him perform and he said that he will still play his songs from decades ago. And he recognizes from the crowd's faces and reaction how much those songs still move them, even though they're old and his early work. But obviously Paul Simon and Simon and Garfunkel were like young prodigy genius songwriters. So their early stuff is really good. And I would hope that they think so too.
Yeah. They're kind of legends. Like I guess in my book, like Brand
if
New.
If you were a legend,
yeah, yeah.
You're going to be good.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, looking at some of that stuff, I just tossed it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But I think it's healthy to be able to toss your physical artwork, your earlier stuff. And honestly, my physical work is like a diary of sorts. That sounds really cliche to say, but it documents each stage of my life and it always has. And as I get older, the earlier stages are easier to move away from. So 5 years ago, I thought I had to hold on to work from 5 years before that, but now I can toss the work from 10 years ago and I'm still holding on to work from 5 years ago. So it's a process.
Yeah, I feel like in my case, I kind of found a style that I'm comfortable with that's uniquely mine. So I think I at least have that going for me. And during that time in school, I was kind of searching for that. Mm-hmm. So it just was a like there's that thing back there. I don't know if you can see it. I know obviously people out there can't see it, You see the canvas behind the couch, the big one?
It's about 38 by 38 with very rainbow-colored spray paint graffiti,
yes.
graphic images. Not graphic like death and gore, but like sharp shapes and stuff.
Yeah. I hate that thing, but I can't I can't get rid of it. And I say I'm going to do something to it and paint over it, but I just have not gotten around to it. And then people tell me they're like, no, that sums you up at that period. I'm like,
sell
then
it to
take
them
it.
For some quarters.
Yeah, exactly. Take it. No, oh no, I couldn't possibly. I'm like, oh, Jesus. So I got to hide it behind my couch. But so you are participating in Blue Lucy's Landscape.
Yes, Blue Lucy's Gallery in St. Pete. It's at 653 Central Ave, and they're having a show called Landscape, and I feel like I'm going to disappoint them with my landscape because Chad, who owns Blue Lucy, told me that the theme is not traditional landscapes, but your world, which is still pretty broad. It's like your world. It seems like a project I maybe would have gotten in middle school. Well, I don't want to say that, but you know what I mean? Like, what's your world like? You know, what do you see inside your head? I guess that's a theme that can stretch across all ages, but I'm a bit of a traditionalist, so I love traditional landscapes.
Okay. See, that's okay, I think, because when I did my first one there, I had a bunch of questions, and I couldn't get him to answer any of them. And
which is maybe how it should be. I mean, an art gallery should keep things broad so artists can have their individuality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. Just do whatever you want. Right. And he's going to, when he sees, he's going to be like, this is lovely. Thank you very much, is what he's going to say.
No matter what, probably.
I was trying to get him to come in here too, but I can't get that guy to answer an email for the life of me. It's very frustrating. So I'm just like, I'm not going to bother. I feel like I'm bothering him. I mean, people in general. I don't want to bother anybody with this, you know, burden anybody. So I do like, my rules of life are kind of like baseball rules.
Yeah.
Three strikes, yes, three times. Then you probably, you know, you probably after two is probably too many. If you ask twice and it doesn't get done, but three times, I figure that's just a little bit over, not the line necessarily, but, you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. So I'm very curious about how all the other artists will interpret Chad's landscape theme or your world theme. I feel like a lot of them will do kind of an interior space, something more abstract. But honestly, I've just spent like a lot of hours at this really great spot on Upham Beach that's in a garden. I don't know if you realize there's this insane garden on Upham Beach.
Where's that?
To the right end of the entrance of Upham Beach here in St. Pete, on St. Pete Beach. Upham is the beach that I went to probably like the week I was born. Like, my family's been going there my entire life. And they just actually renovated it. They've been working on renovating the beach for years, many years. They've had, they've been dredging up sand, and they've had these huge kind of like bags, yellow bags of sand sitting on the beach. And now they've filled the entire beach in. So there's no more yellow bags. They have sand over them. It kind of stops erosion.
Okay.
So now you walk all the way across that sand to the right, and there's this garden that's kept up by one of the apartment complexes on the beach. And it is a really nice garden. It's one of my favorite places in St. Pete. And there's mangrove trees that stretch up and create a canopy and little tunnels. And there's a lot of colorful flowers. And it's right next to the water, too. So when I was trying to think of what I wanted to paint, I knew I wanted to do a traditional landscape, a realistic landscape, because I feel like I'm always wanting to better hone my realism skills, especially in oil paint. And I was looking at paintings by the second Andrew Wyeth, who was the illustrator, and he did illustrations for, I think, some sort of like Native American or like cowboys and Indians sort of novel. And he had these great spaces. One painting that comes to mind, I'll have to maybe figure out the name but later, but it's this huge canyon, and there's this Native American at the very bottom of the canyon in the river in a canoe. And he's, you know, going through the small space, and there's like light at the end. And it was just such a great sense of this space with like a little bit of light coming through. And I felt the same thing being in the little mangrove tunnel at the end of St. Pete Beach. So that's what I decided to paint. And I feel like it still has many hours to go.
So you consider yourself kind of a traditionalist as far as you're trying to make things look like they do in real life? Like,
I somehow have separated my art practice to a studio practice, which is most often traditional. I love portraiture and figurative work and realism, and I'm inspired by masters like Vermeer and Sargent and Bouguereau. I love his figures. But as far as work for a purpose or maybe a social cause, I love community arts. I love murals. And I really feel like that's a bit separate from my studio practice, making artworks that exist to just be artworks. You know, I also feel like I have a whole side of my artistic self that is to serve community too.
I see. Okay. Because I know just, I feel like we have cameras now. So as far as realism goes, I can appreciate that, and I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel like it's kind of a lost, it's, you don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah. When the camera was invented, everyone, especially the painters, were like, this is going to kill painting. But, and you know, I also had, in reaction to that claim, painting is now going to be dead because photography exists. I always think of one professor I had in college. I went to art school at the Maryland Institute College of Art. And one of my professors said, as long as there are walls, people will need paintings. Which,
yeah,
I thought was really funny. And I don't know how much I like, I don't know if I would repeat that as something that, oh, well, this is my response to, you know, the necessity of a traditional kind of painting. But somehow I do still think that a traditional method of painting is important, not just for an individual and like their own health, maybe even like their own spiritual health or like sanity. But I think it's important to learn too. I think that it, it's a way of thinking. You know, it makes you more smart.
I think so. I think that if you can understand the natural world that you live in, you kind of got to master that first, and it's only going to expand your creativity. And they say you got to work on things 10,000 hours, I think, to become a master. So if you want to become a good realism artist, you know, you could do it. I don't have the dedication to do it. And to me, making a nice image is the most important thing. I feel like the camera freed up humanity to really get creative.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But I also will say that realism, recreating things on paper as they exist in real life, will always be magical. I remember being in it wasn't a township in South Africa. It was like a cardboard town. Like, people didn't really have houses, and I would see on the little like corrugated metal drawings, you know, all the kids would still draw like on their houses and stuff, which was interesting because I went to South Africa to study wall art, not wall art in like pictures you hang on a wall, but like murals, community murals, and the paintings that native people would do on their walls. But that practice has kind of deceased in the traditional sense, like indibeli paintings, these large, colorful geometric patterns on walls don't really exist anymore. Mm-hmm. That was like the 70s when they stopped. But anyway, all of these kids, you know, obviously they see a white person, so they're like, oh, it's so different. And I would do drawings of each of their faces, and they just scream. They're like, wow, it's magical, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to see something come to life on paper as it exists in real life, I think will always be magical to human beings.
I think it's kind of a spiritual thing, maybe, just knowing that you can create something similar to the universe or whatever you want to call it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think I have, that's yours. You did that of me there, that freehand one with the cigarette in my mouth.
That does not even look like a person.
It doesn't. I think it's because it's on its side, too. But that was at...
Is it blind?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you kind of just did it quick. Yeah. I love it, though. I like that one a lot.
Cool. Yeah. No, that is true that, like, now that painting doesn't have to serve a photographic purpose, it can serve many other purposes, too.
Yeah. Like I said, to me, I feel like it's just important to... I'm afraid to even get in a social commentary with art. I almost feel like that's, I mean, you can make it say whatever you want to say, and you could paint anything, and the artist is free to say, this is what it's about, and you have to take them at their word. Because I'm almost kind of, I feel like it's one of the biggest hustles of all time.
Agreed.
This painting thing, you know, like Jeff Koons and guys like that who make these sculptures and sell them for millions and millions of dollars.
They're more businessman than artists.
Totally. And well, Everybody that's in the art spectrum now, if they're making any money, you have to be a businessman. And it's a businessman
above you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hustle, and it's kind of stinks, but I mean, that's how it is. But you have to understand, too, that there is value in these things that you create. Not everybody can do these things, so there is value in it, and you should be paid to do it.
Yep.
Okay, nothing to add there.
I would talk way too long if I had to comment on that. You should be paid to do it. Yeah, I mean, I think what it all boils down to is that the reality is never the ideal. You know, like ideally you should be, but in reality, that's almost never how it works out.
Yeah.
Kind of like everything in the world.
Right. Yeah. What's that old life is what happens when you're making other plans type of thing? Or...
What? I wouldn't have chosen that phrase to go with what I was saying. But
I don't know. I'm an artist, so I don't.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
I can say whatever I want, and that's cool.
Uh-huh.
So you're also into TV Land as well,
art,
not the network.
Yes, art, not the network, but I am on TV, and art brought me to television.
Tell me about that, because I know you were telling me, we kind of have this peripheral relationship where you would kind of come around sometimes, and you know mutual friends of mine, and we recently kind of exchanged phone numbers, so now we're buds now, I think,
so
at this point.
So now we have to be friends.
Now we're just stuck, you know, we got into Facebook territory, now we're in numbers. Exchange territory.
So
we're
I can be
now.
On your radio show.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'd have you on anyway because I think you're interesting.
Thanks.
But,
well, I'll tell you how I got into TV. So when I graduated from art school, I spent almost 2 years in Georgia, and I'm glad I did. That's where my husband's family's from. That's where he lived at the time. And after that, I moved back to St. Pete, thinking that I would just kind of regroup after a trip to South Africa, you know, get my financial bearings again and go back to Georgia. But I, in the first few days of being in St. Pete, couldn't sit still, went and applied to a job selling art on TV and stayed there for the next 2 years.
Where do you find the application for that?
This is the most quirky company you've ever heard of. I'm not going to say the company's name, but they spend $0 on marketing and recruited almost every person who works there from Craigslist, which is a really bad idea.
No kidding.
Yes.
Why are you afraid to say the company name?
I don't like burning bridges.
Well, yeah, that's not gonna
burn
bridges.
I left the company, and after 2 years of experience on television, 3 hours a day, three nights a week, you know, my first link was art. Okay, I'm an artist. I have an art background. I know art. I can sell it on TV. But then after I had that TV experience, I was able to move on to HSN as a guest expert selling electronics on TV. And it's really fun. I have to tell you, HSN's slogan is, it's fun here, and it really is fun there. It is so fun.
My mom might disagree with you, but she was an operator there for like 15 years or something like that. I don't even think
she was like
they
a
have...
phone. I don't know what their technical term is, but she was like a phone center rep.
Yes. I don't even think they have a phone center anymore.
They do. I do kind of feel like their job might get dull, but they have a huge phone center. HSN is a $9 billion company, and it's broadcast to 90 million homes in the U.S., and they are based here in St. Petersburg, Florida, and about half of their 4,000 employees work at this one campus right here in St. Pete. Now, before they got this great work-from-home program where most of their phone reps are able to take calls from their house, like they just set up the system at home, everyone did have to go to the campus and sit in that little cubicle and take calls, which is what your mom probably did. Mm-hmm. But if you walk through that phone center now, it is almost desolate because so many people work from home.
I know that I think a lot of things got exported to India, but with...
Not India?
Yes, but this was before everything kind of collapsed. So I think they probably did.
Wait,
go
everything
to India.
Collapsed?
The economy.
Oh,
Our economy kind of collapsed.
Okay.
And now I think it's probably cheaper to hire people here than it is in India. So I think maybe a lot of jobs came back. But I know she was telling me that at the time a lot of jobs headed overseas. But that was common practice. That was not just a home shopping thing. That was across the board. Everyone has sent their call centers
well,
out.
Well, around 2006, HSN got Mindy Grossman as their CEO. I'm not positive, but I think she came from Nike, but she kind of did a makeover of the entire company ethos, if you will. Like, they went very much online. Their website is a huge deal. Social media is a huge deal. And they are marketing to a younger and younger audience. So their main demographic is a 57-year-old mother who's raised her family. Maybe she's an empty nester. Family's really important to her, and she loves to shop, obviously.
Has to fill those voids of children gone with things.
Things for her children and her grandchildren. But yeah, Mindy Grossman knows that that 57-year-old woman, 80% of the customers are women, is their main audience. But then we really try and reach out to someone who would be like that person's daughter. So maybe someone in their 30s who is also a mother, maybe a young mother, a business person, you know, only likes to shop economically and quickly and efficiently. And HSN does that. So yeah, it's kind of weird to be in television and to be in shopping. I don't shop much myself, and I haven't owned a television in many years, but it is a fascinating field, and I love presenting, and I love talking in front of people, and I love educating. I think that's one of the main things that got me through 2 years at my old company and will get me through this. I just love teaching people about things. So at my old company, I got to talk about art history for 3 hours, and here I get to talk about electronics, which is a fascinating field that I'm so glad that I get to learn more about.
The art one that you did, was yeah. that based in Georgia?
No, it was right here in St. Pete.
Oh, it was based in St. Pete.
Yes.
So yeah. What did you graduate in?
Did you get a degree? I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in painting with a minor in culture and politics.
Okay. I won't even get into that, culture and politics. So I'm assuming you had to take a lot of art history. So I guess that kind of helped during when you're finding that job or when you found that job.
It did. And I was very fortunate to be able to have a job where learning art history was kind of an aspect of it. So for every single piece that I would sell on air, it was actually an auction format. So for every piece in the auction, I would have to research the piece. I'd research the artist and the time period. And I learned so much at that job, which I'm really grateful for. As I said, I love education. I love learning. So.
Yeah. So is it kind of the same thing then?
In electronics at HSN?
Yeah.
Totally is. I have a brother-in-law who's a network engineer for a company that runs most of the gambling machines, like the machines you play if you go to a casino. They make sure that those things function like all over the country. So my brother-in-law is in charge of the networks that those operate on. You know, he builds them, he maintains them. And I have always thought that, like, I would never even begin to understand, like, what he does. But even just having to learn a little bit about, like, cell phones and the internet and, you know, how computers work has helped me, like, gain a greater appreciation for what he does and get excited about a field that I was never really excited about before.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the future.
It is. It's here. We are dawned in a new age here. You know how they have, like, the Bronze Age and... This is, like, a new... exciting time to be alive. Also very scary.
I know. I feel so bad for future kids that will never have lived in a world where the internet didn't exist.
Yeah.
I feel like even though they will gain almost everything, they lose something.
Yeah. Biggest piece of advice, don't take naked pictures of yourself.
You know, that's pretty much what we should teach every new person to these generations.
They never go away. And if you do, just don't put your face in them. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I could just see myself teaching kids in, like, public schools. This is the internet. This is technology. Here's the number one rule. Don't take naked pictures.
Yeah. Well, no, seriously. I think they really need to. Because we kind of grew up in this first. I had a computer in the house, and I had, like, AOL dial-up and stuff like that. And I built my first computer with my stepdad. He taught me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, he did it, but I kind of tried to pay attention. I'm dumb. I couldn't really understand it. But he tried, and I know how to use the internet as far as I can access the internet and then go to websites, but I don't know, like, now I feel like I'm at such a disadvantage because I don't know how to build a website. I don't know the process of anything really else other than just accessing stuff. And like, I need to have a website and I need to have some sort of presence outside of social media.
There's a lot of websites that make that easy today though.
Yeah, I've heard that. But I still, it's making it easy. Like I would still rather know it's taking a shortcut, but you want to know how it's done.
The bare bones, like the skeletal structure of it.
And I think that's really important. Like we should be teaching our kids because it is going to be, it's only going to get more complex, and not only how to use it, but, how to use it, such as don't take naked pictures of yourself as an example, because it's never going to go away. But really understand, because I don't think people understand what they're doing.
Right. That's a good point.
So we should have some sort of, I don't know how you're going to squeeze in social studies too during this time.
I also substitute teach, and I taught a social studies class at a middle school 2 days ago. That was U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
And I went home and told my husband about it. And my husband was homeschooled and has a very high standard for education, obviously. And we're both, you know, very upset at how much slips through the crack with the cracks with public school. I mean, what can you do? But he was just like, you know, U.S. history. I was telling him that the U.S. history books were like, this is what colonial life was like. These were the sights and tastes and smells and sounds, you know, like this is how slaves got here. And it's just like super, super basic. And he's like, this is not what they need to be learning. Like, okay, breeze through early U.S. history, but get to like the very important aspects of what's going on now. And I don't know. I don't know what he would exactly say if he were here, but he would probably have a really good idea of what social studies should be.
There's a lot to learn. There's a lot that has happened before.
Which is why you have to be an independent learner.
I think so too.
Very few people are.
That was going to be my point. I feel like they should have, I don't know how you would necessarily accomplish it, but find what somebody is good at.
Right.
And focus more on those things. If they're better at math and science, let's get those kids together and work on that stuff. You know, and then, okay, these kids are better at, you know, English.
Yeah, I like that.
I feel like that would be the way to do it. Because then you're going to have not everybody be average at everything, but you're going to have a lot of exceptional people out there.
I think that the public school's response to that is maybe magnet schools, where you can go to a magnet for the arts or the sciences or computer or business. They do have those in Pinellas County in high school and some in middle school, too. But still, it's still not as much individual attention as is necessary. And I don't think there ever will be as much individual attention given.
Yeah, I know. And I know the public schools stink, especially here.
But you know, what's weird is I was raised K-12 in this public school system and had an unusually phenomenal experience. So when I talk about it, I always sound like an extreme pessimist, like there is no hope, but I also believe in it a lot because it worked for me, so it can work for others.
Well, what stood out that made it exceptional for you?
The magnet schools.
Oh, okay.
I went to an arts magnet,
okay.
And that was a situation where you could say like, hey, this is what I love. I remember when I was in fifth grade, my mom said, Stephanie, she, as a parent, saw that I was a creative person and that I love to draw. And she said, do you want to go to school where you can have an art class every day? And I said, yes. And so from 6th to 12th grade, I went to a school that focused on what I was good at, which is the arts.
What was that school?
John Hopkins Middle and Gibbs High School. And they both had arts magnet programs. And Gibbs is called the Pinellas County Center for the Arts, which is, I believe it started in the, when did it start? Maybe I shouldn't even go into that. I want to say like the 80s, but I don't know. But my point is, Pinellas County Center for the Arts has turned out some incredible artists. I mean, one of the dancers for the American Ballet Company, like America's biggest and best ballet company, is from Gibbs. He danced there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I mean, they and a lot of my peers went on to be great artists. And one of them, well, actually, that wasn't a Gibbs peer. But my point is, there's a lot of people that have made it in Broadway and in the fine art world and in dance and music that did come from Gibbs.
Yeah, that's I didn't even know that existed. I went to Largo High School, and I was actually in their 21st century program very briefly.
Computers?
No, it was just smarter kids, I guess. I applied and I got in. I don't know just how I squeaked through. Yeah.
Excellence.
But then I wanted to hang out with my friends, so I stopped going to class, and then I asked my mom if I could just go back to regular classes, and she was like, sure. Now, in retrospect, I look back and, why did you let me do that? And she was just, you wanted to do it. So, and I guess, you know, it made me what I am today. So I guess you can't look back. But sometimes I wonder, what if I would have just stuck it out? Because you got stuck with, you had like a class the whole time. All these classes went to other classes together. So you didn't have that variety. Like, you were almost forced to become close with this group. Which I didn't, I like the aspect of having different kids, but then you probably would have made like lifelong pals.
Yeah. If you were in one class with only a few kids, you would have really strong friendships.
I think it was 4 years. Maybe it was only for the year and then you switched it up. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a huge question in my mind. Which do you go for? Like being in a community, like as, you know, maybe when you're younger, when you're getting your education, do you go for a diverse community that's going to present a lot of challenges to your education, or do you go for a community that's not as diverse but is going to help you excel academically? I mean, my parents sent me to an elementary school that doesn't exist anymore, but it was half handicapped students. They wanted us to be different than the people, you know that everyone's different. And you know, my high school was majority an African-American high school. In fact, back when schools were segregated, it was only a black high school. And when Barack Obama was doing his first campaign, he visited Gibbs. Mm. But the arts program didn't integrate a lot with traditional students, as they called them. Like, the arts students weren't in a lot of classes with traditional students. So it wasn't, you know, as diverse as you would think, I guess. But yeah, it's a big challenge. I don't know what's better, to be with, like, you know, to be the one kid. Like, say there was one kid in the kindergarten class I taught this morning who was really smart and could learn, and be in a class with like 28 other kids who were like not just hurting each other physically, but hurting him too and hurting his opportunity for learning. It's like, that kid has opportunity to excel and he will benefit from being around kids that are different from him, and he will grow stronger because of the challenges that creates, but he could also get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And he could, those other kids could completely sabotage his opportunities for learning.
Yeah.
I guess I'm fortunate that didn't happen to me. I don't know. I remember like getting pushed and hurt, but
I think that's,
I don't know.
That's just, I think kids have always been like that.
Kids be cray.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they're cruel. You know, I look back, I think a pretty nice kid, but I remember doing some stuff now where I'm just like, oh man.
Doing
like
what? That. Mean things to
just
other kids?
Mean things to other people. Mostly because, it's always because you're unhappy and you're not happy with yourself. Not a lot, but I can remember a few experiences where it wasn't good. I feel really bad about it.
Oh no.
But I feel like everybody probably did that.
So did you have art when you were in high school?
Yeah. Yeah, I took a few art classes.
Nothing
serious. I didn't really like my teacher, so we didn't get along very well.
That means almost everything, to have a good teacher.
It does.
I was in a classroom at a very like advantage school recently that had Wacom tablets out the wazoo for doing like illustration drawings on the computer and Photoshop. They had like all these digital cameras and nice computers and a great studio that you could draw and paint in, even though they didn't do a lot of that. And the kids told me, our teacher doesn't teach. I haven't learned anything in art class except for how to lay out a bunch of pictures on one file in Photoshop.
Oh, man.
And they had all of the tools at their fingertips. But if the teacher's not going to teach it,
yeah,
they're not going to learn a thing.
That's,
this has turned into like education hour with
that's
Will
okay.
and Stephanie.
That's why I like to keep them very loose so they
yeah.
can kind of go wherever
well,
they want.
I don't know. It's kind of where I am. Like, I haven't subbed for long at all right now. But I think about it constantly. I am constantly thinking about my friends who teach in other places in the country and in the world, and how they chose that because they feel like education is the most important thing and is the biggest thing that can make a difference in society and in the future. And I'm like, oh, I get it now. Like, the stakes are so high.
Yeah, it's a very noble, I think, profession.
It's yeah, like, very... you could never be paid enough to work in these schools where, like, your life is at risk.
Yeah, and
it's like a war zone.
No reward.
Again, I'm being way too dramatic, but...
No, I mean, very little reward. I mean, there's probably a lot of self-reward. I don't know the word.
Yeah, I know.
But at the same time, you got to put up with a lot of junk.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I mean, just imagine being in a school system in, like, New York City where there's, like, thousands of overcrowded schools there. You know,
I think it's bad here, though, too. I mean, it's really bad here, too. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't think it would necessarily be worse there. I don't know. I mean, perhaps. But I don't know what it is, but it seems like it's only getting worse. Because I know when I went to school, like I said, looking back, we tormented teachers for no good reason just because we were pieces of garbage. Not me. I was okay. But I know some kids.
Except for those few times that you remember.
I remember there was this lady, Miss Lane. She was an English teacher. Mm-hmm. She was so sweet, very soft-spoken. And one day I was using the restroom, so I was kind of just walking around for a little while, taking a break. And she was yelling at the assistant principal in a golf cart, saying how she wasn't a soldier. And because the kids tormented her, man. I mean, just...
So you saw that happen on your bathroom excursion?
And at the time, I was like...
You weren't supposed to see that.
No, I wasn't. At the time, I was just kind of like, ha. But now, when I look back on it, I get like I get a funky feeling in my stomach.
How old were you?
I was 11th grade. So 16, maybe 15.
And your English teacher was telling the assistant principal she wasn't a soldier.
A soldier, yeah.
A.K.A. a teacher, a classroom teacher.
She was a classroom teacher, yes.
But the assistant principal wasn't. Is that why she wasn't a soldier? Because she wasn't in the trenches of the classroom?
No, because she felt like she was in the trenches of life, having to fight these kids. Because
right.
The kids were just awful.
Yeah.
Awful. And I don't know what, I guess, like, I saw a comic where... they show the differences in today, like the parents get mad at the teacher as opposed to if the teacher said, hey, your son's being or daughter is being, I'm trying to find a nice word to use, an a-hole.
Disruptive.
Sure. Disruptive.
Disobedient.
Nice. Then they would probably get beaten when they got home or, you know, something. And now it's always the teacher's fault.
Mm. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of.
It's definitely parenting. It's got to be parenting.
I know. You know, that's funny because once you start to talk about education, you then begin to boil it all down to the fact that parenting is kind of the root of it all.
Yeah, I feel like probably I don't have kids.
I don't either.
So I don't really know what it's like, but I'm just making assumptions.
We're just
talking about what
we don't even know.
Yeah,
but
I feel like probably a lot of parents just look at it as a daycare. Type of thing, and you're supposed to be teaching my kid as opposed to taking an active role in their education.
Mm-hmm.
The majority is
my mom is in administration, and she has always thought that high school should have child development as a required course because majority of people do become parents, and I think that, you know, schools are, I don't know, maybe even our society don't place enough importance on, like, thinking about these things before you have kids. You know, like, you and I are at a disadvantage. Neither of us have kids when we talk about the subject because we don't know what we're talking about. You know, if there's a parent listening to this right now, they're like, oh, okay, they see these problems in education and they see that the source of some of the problems might be parenting, but they don't know anything because they don't have kids. You know, that's a totally valid point, but... It is a good thing for people without kids to mull over these things before they have kids, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what would be the ideal situation that I want my life to look like at the time I want to have kids so I could give them the best education? You know, like in my husband's family, they knew that they lived in a county with horrible schools that they didn't want to send their kids to. So they made sure they were in careers that allowed them, like his mom's a nurse. She worked nights, you know, she worked a few shifts and she was able to be home a lot to educate her kids. You know, life's full of choices. Like if you don't yet have kids, you need to mold your life to eventually look like the life you want to have when you do have kids. That doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah, and I feel like that people just don't want to face realities of what's really going on. They want to find some sort of external stimulus, excuse, of things to place it on, and instead of just being like, you need to do something with your kids. It's your fault. It's a parent's fault. And nobody really wants to admit that, even though what else could it be? Mm. It's probably not the schools. You're providing the teachers, you have some sort of, they're going through the process, their interviewing process. Okay, we trust you to handle this. You've been to school, college educated. You have to be college educated, right, to get a teaching job?
Yes.
Okay, so
in Pinellas County.
You're qualified. You have a curriculum. So why are some schools performing not as well as other schools? It's not, are kids just dumb in other areas?
It has to do with everything. It either
is, I think that is probably just dumb in some occasions, and it's got to be the parents.
Well, it's the administrators, the teachers, the parents, the students. I mean, all those people have autonomy, and they're all making the decisions that they want to make, and all of them can make
decisions.
So
you're being
decisions.
Nice, though. I feel like you're being nice because you want to place some blame. I don't blame the teachers. See, again, I don't know what I'm talking about, though. So this is just my opinion, but I feel
this
like...
This is what radio's good for. Right?
Yeah, that's just talking. That is what it's here for. Yeah. It's just a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's got to be... You got to place the blame on the parents.
I mean, maybe this is me just being nice, but if I were to try and empathize with parents, I have heard that parent bashing is the worst kind of bashing. You know, like when one person looks at another person's parenting and makes some sort of critique of it, that is the worst critique you will hear in your life, like out of all the things you do. My sister-in-law has a 2-year-old, and she said, I do not judge how people parent their kids anymore. Because she used to. She is a psychology and sociology double major, and she loves analyzing family and social systems. But she's like, I realize now that a kid is who they're going to be. Like parenting, you know, the nurture aspect of things can influence how a kid's going to turn out. But there's also nature. And these
fair.
Kids sometimes just come out the way they are. And it's like, what can you do? I mean, you can do what you were saying earlier, try and steer their paths towards their strengths and, you know, focus on their interests and strong suits.
That's a good point, though. That's fair, is you have to look at, you know, I could go into a whole philosophical debate there, too, with, and, you know, you could even look at fatalism and stuff like that. If you believe in this is how it's going to happen and everything's out on a timeline.
Like you have a fate.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could look at it that way, too. But I feel like if you're looking at it in a, what's the word? I'm an English major.
The opposite of fate, like free will?
No, just kind of looking at it objectively.
Okay.
And saying, okay, this is... I feel like, in my opinion, which I don't know anything...
Wait, is this objective or opinionated?
It's the objective of my opinion, I guess.
All right, just say what you're going to say. I'll see if I can follow you.
Well, I was just going to say it's the parents' fault, but we got to... It's the parents' fault.
Objectively, it's the parents' fault.
So start raising your kids.
Not an opinion.
Yes. But yeah, we're almost out of time anyway, so we're going to leave it at that. Parents...
It's
raise your
fault.
Kids right, and it's your fault. And when is the
we love you.
Yeah? When is the Blue Lucy show again? And what's the address there?
Blue Lucy is a gallery at 653 Central Ave, St. Pete. It is Saturday, October 18th, 2014, at 7 p.m. That's when the opening for the landscape show is happening.
So that is next Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. And the open mic 4, is Tuesday the 14th. Excuse me, and that is at Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue, 8 p.m. Stephanie McKee, thank you very much for coming and talking to me.
Thanks, Will.
I think we got a lot of things hashed out today.
I think we solved a lot of world problems.
Definitely.
Glad to be here.
All right, so for the Homemade Broadcast, my name is Will Kuntz, and check out Radio St. Pete for this. Oh, I forgot to... I'm supposed to reintroduce the guest every 10 minutes. I forgot to do that this time. Dang.
My name's Stephanie McKee. I work at HSN and I'm on TV.
Thank you. Okay. have a great week. And I'll talk to you. I don't know. I guess I'll come to the comedy thing and say hello.
All right. We love y'all out there.
Next Thursday. Goodbye. See ya.
Bye.